Welcome to the Ether. Today is Tuesday, January 3rd, 2023. Today on the Ether, part two of the two-part Chepe Space, your stock and crypto picks. Let's take a listen.
Sweet. Also, do you have another comment about this?
I think Breuer had the hand before me a long time ago. So please
go right ahead. Go ahead.
Guys. Yeah, I had a startup that I've been investigating a little bit that you guys might be interested in. I think there's some opportunity for investment there. But I'm about to pick up my daughter. If you mind, I'll just pin it to the top.
We can take a look at it.
It's a crypto-specific social media platform.
Cool. Oh, this is an interesting post by also at the top, too. FDA has approved 521 medical AI tools so far. 23 will see more adoption of artificial intelligence. Yeah, like I was talking to a surgeon about, you know, the applications of AI related to like tying surgical knots on robotic surgery the other day and other interesting little tools. I think what will happen is that some of these like small scale like visual AI tools will sort of make themselves into lots of little machines and things in the next few years, and may not necessarily be like doing the surgery for you or whatever, but will handle small tasks. Like, you know, like they'll feel like little micro automations. Like you push a button and you're like, okay, I need you to like, you know, tie me a standard surgical knot here. And it's going to be able to use the visual field, process that data, and then move the robotic arm movements. And all you had to do is push, tie the knot. But in the background, there's a neural network at play that's doing all of the three-dimensional work and visual analysis, things like that.
Let me explain to you. In one of the project, like a long time ago, I was responsible of it. And we had to develop a deep learning algorithm where can actually, we call it pipelines to interact with the different VR mechanism. Let's say the doctor is in New York and the patient is in Germany, in Berlin. And to contact the data, have to have exactly by seconds, the time, real-time connection, keeping the room temperature or the patient temperature, or the understanding the human body. You know what? Through that project, I felt at the end, I said, oh my God, I feel like I'm a doctor now. Because I did learn a lot about medical surgery stuff, and when we made the documentation, I felt seriously very passionate about what I was learning, because I saw the artificial intelligence, how much was solving. They are small problems for us, but they count a lot. They save us time. And imagine the doctor was actually executing operation when the doctor was in New York and the patient was in Germany. It was insane. It was a matter just of having a VR excellent machine where it's monitored here in Germany by an AI where the doctor is.
Yeah,
by, you know, like, it was insane to look to the whole picture, you know.
Yeah, the medical space has like a lot of AI applications. Like I can come up with maybe like 20 or 30 just off the top of my head, just start listing them just in my normal workload. All I have to do is like, because that's what I do for a living. So like all I have to do is think about, okay, what do we do for a living? And then say like, what could we do better? Like what could you use machine learning for? Like, for example, we do things like electrolyte replacement, which is like you're in the hospital, your potassium's low or something like that. But there's a lot of factors that go into deciding how much to give, when to give it, is it necessary, and these type of things. Really, really good tasks for machine learning based systems, and fairly easy to create on the grand scheme of things compared to a lot of other complicated machine things. So a lot of, I would say, medical related AI tools are among the lowest hanging fruit in AI and probably will have a product market fit very readily. The question right now becomes like, so those types of tools, it's almost like probably small smart startups will create a lot of those tactics. And then some of the bigger companies like Cerner and Epic, some of these like EMR companies will probably be the ones that ultimately ultimately are the ones that sort of buy those companies out or like, you know, pay for those APIs or something like that. So, yeah, there's a lot of that that's going to happen. I foresee like over the next 10 years, like medical in particular, changing dramatically through AI tools, not just a little bit, like everything we do will change.
Let me tell you this. I have a friend still is working with IBM, and she's working on AI data processing section. And you know, sometimes we have discussions. Hey, how's it going? What's up? What's IBM? IBM is up to? So based on the knowledge what I have, IBM right now investing hugely. You know, for they have three components: in medical health, blockchain, and artificial intelligence. Because, you know,
collecting quantum data, computing. They're the leader in quantum computing.
Of course. Yeah, absolutely. But also we have to look to the bigger picture. It's not anymore about the amount of the data you have. It's about actually what is the quality of the data you have. IBM is focusing on filtering, processing, pre-processing this data all to understand how's the human behavior that we could explain or we could translate through the binaries as much as possible to a machine where it can understand us, where it can predict us better accuracy, better result, solve us complex problems. And this is also with a quantum computer applying. But I'm seeing IBM is kind of taking the lead, you know, in investing in health industry by using artificial intelligence. Of course, the quantum computing is the backbone of IBM right now, but I'm seeing that for the future, it's a huge for this company. They're playing this game very slow, very intensely, and they're developing.
Yeah, right now products. IBM, like, so the research I've done about their quantum systems, like Osprey and stuff, the new, you know, their new like high 400 plus qubit supercomputer. Like, there's not that many applications yet for this, and also the error correction is not very good yet. So I think IBM estimated that you might get quantum supremacy by about 2026, 2027, something like that, where, you know, like this computer is going to do more than maybe a traditional computer of the similar scale. So there's a ways to go. And I wasn't sure like where IBM is in their sort of like medical AI. I know they've been building Watson forever. I'm not sure how good it is or what it does. Like, you rarely hear about it. And that's their medical AI.
I heard a week ago, by the way.
Yeah, I don't know where they are and what it can do. I'd be curious. I'd love to go see the damn thing and see what it does.
Still scaling up this kind of system. It's not easy, you know. It's not easy, seriously.
Many people think that's scaling up. It'd be fun, yeah. Like, it'd be fun interacting with that and see how good like Watson is now as far as like medical decision making and things like that. I did pick up IBM stock over the last couple of weeks, and I got it because it has a price to earnings like that's relatively on the high side. It's like 100 in tech, but at the same time, the dividend yield was high at that price. It's like around 4.5% dividend yield. So I think I bought more IBM than I did of other things right now.
Because
of that.
What's interesting to me about that, I saw that you did that. And like, you know, it's an old stalwart of the Dow. They called it Big Blue, right? Like for blue chip. And it does look like it's kind of bear or bull flagging a little bit, and it kind of wants to break out of this range. But when you look at like the 5-year chart, like I remember one trader telling me about this, J&J is kind of the same way. It looks like a turd floating in the punch bowl, like meaning it just kind of like bloop, 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 bloop. Like it doesn't go anywhere, right? It's just like bloop, 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 bloop. Like a turd floating in a punch bowl.
And it may never go anywhere, by the way. I sort of like picked it up for the dividend. I picked it up because I think they're doing a variety of areas in tech that are interesting. Again, specifically, like I was impressed that they got the Osprey out this soon. The number of qubits that are increasing per year, you know, on these computers, that's an impressive thing. So to me, it's like, in a way, it's like an exposure to the quantum computing space with a blue chip with a decent dividend, and the overall stock is priced acceptably for me at this point, especially because tech got largely wrecked, and it was one of the least wrecked stocks of the tech space, and wasn't really in like bubble territory in like a lot of things. So that's kind of, I kind of took it all together and said, okay, I'll get some. But it was like a way to kind of keep track of what they're doing and like, you know, being invested in the quantum computing space. I think these sort of trends, like tech trends, man, like even back in like, I don't know, the 90s, 2000s, whatever, it's like the fact that these things were going to be big at some point in the future was really, really obvious. And what happened is like most people sort of just underexpose themselves to all these things because they figure, I'll just wait. I'll wait till it's like a big thing, or I'll wait till everyone else is buying it or something like that. And to me, it's like, well, if I'm going to worry about like, if I'm going to get into quantum computing, one is like, there's only so many, you have to have a certain scale of company just to build a quantum computer. It's not like you just do it in your basement or whatever. It's very highly complex, materials management, like materials tech and everything. So it's like the early movers in that are very hard to catch later. And if it is a really, really important sort of like computing space, then to me, it's like, well, I want to have a piece of that action. And it's one of the few, like, I don't know, it's not really a pure play, by the way, in quantum computing, but nobody really is. But like grabbing a bit of Google, grabbing a bit of IBM, things like that, the old school things, does make sense from the perspective of exposure to AI and quantum. And if those things become really big and really monetizable by those companies, then of course there'll be another, like, you know, heyday of, you know, 20 years of like growth, right? So these things, you can't measure them in like, you know, 6 months or a year or whatever. Like you can have really big bubbles in between and big crashes in between, but you can wind up with like a long play that could be really good.
I got another boring one for you on that front that I picked some up about two
and,
weeks
and by
ago.
The way, Hutch, like IBM's only like maybe 100 billion market cap, that range. So we're not talking trillion-dollar companies and stuff like some of the bigger ones.
I'm actually going to keep my eye. It's a little too big price wise for the optionality, because you need to be able to post 15,000 to buy the puts. But I'm going to watch this little range because it does look like it wants to break out of this range. And maybe it's just for those reasons that you said, it's got a really high PE, but like there's moats around this AI thing, and who's got the scale to do it? It's them. And that's why they're able to maintain a price with that high of a PE. So I'm going to keep my eye on it. Yeah. I appreciate that.
And the interesting thing too is like the fact that they have AI and quantum under the same roof. How many companies do that? There's defense contractors, there's Google. Not very many. So you can imagine like programming computers that are doing quantum calculations. AI may be the smartest thing to be able to program those things in the future or detect like future applications. So the sort of like intersection of AI and quantum is really, really interesting to me, because like I remember Roger Penrose, one of the physicists, like one of the like leading physicists in black hole theory and astrophysics and whatever. One of his assertions long ago, and I'm not sure it ever played out as to be actually true or not, but there was this assertion that like microtubules in the brain may work like not just at a chemical level like we think about the brain, but may work at a quantum level. No one's ever been able to really prove that. So like just take that with a grain of salt. But that's where the intersection of like computational systems like our brain and potentially like chemical or quantum systems come in. So if you have like under the same roof, like a Google DeepMind, and you have like people like IBM that they're working on both AI and they've done it for a long time and they're doing quantum at the same time, who is most likely to find AI applications for quantum computing and vice versa? I think it's going to be them if I had to guess. So that's why I'm like looking at those. And then Apple is sort of like the consumer version of AI chips. Micron, we talked about Apple because it's putting AI related chips in practically every chip it ships in terms of neural network chips. So that's interesting and bullish for Apple to me long term, in that like, you know, they control the hardware and the software. Who's most likely to, you know, understand like optimizing the future of neural networks for consumer electronics? You know, Apple is like positioned well to be able to deploy that on their chips, which is interesting too.
I mean, related to the quantum computing, based on like, because I have been also interested in quantum computing last almost decade, and at some point I wanted to build a small quantum computer, but the even actually IBM Google, most of those companies are struggling to scale it up. You know, scaling up quantum computing currently is not that much easy, or I could say that we could see next maybe 5 to 10 years, you know, it might take time. But currently, the out observation what they have, IBM is kind of taking attention the applications of quantum computing and AI. Where, but keep in mind, the term of quantum AI, the meaning it is using the quantum computing, some like equations or some machine learning algorithms, which is take it, of course, to most, you know, I could say that. But currently, they did test some applications where it takes it to the max of the computing and AI. I could take it like to 100x more than what we have normally, the computing what we use. Processing a large sets of data, that was the huge advantage for many, many companies. I don't know how many of you, but BlackRock did generate or created a lab, specifically lab for AI developers. They collected even actually Blake. Everyone knows Blake. He was, I think, saying that Google AI Lambda is unconscious. Currently, they did offer him even a job. I know Blake. There's many people who we know him because it's BlackRock was creating this called AI lab to collect data and to start to build application what is related to the quantum for pre-processing the data what they have. I mean, I'm talking about the large set of data, you know, where solving complex problem. It will be faster, better for businesses or, you know, for financial components. But I'm seeing BlackRock is playing big game. And that is the game what I think any company could be smarter to play. I don't support anyone,
they have a lot of money and they're not, I don't think BlackRock's publicly traded still. So it's one of those things, like whatever they're doing in the background, they're going to hoard that for the most part. Or they might invest in companies that do things or maybe buy startups. But yeah, it's all the things that the big houses. Thing.
You know what, the data, if you want to make money, like as an investor or as an individual, right now we have these AI tools like ChatGPT or GPT-3. You can get access to the GPT-3 itself because ChatGPT is less than 2% of the main GPT-3 because of the data set what they have. So right now, when we look to the bigger picture, okay, people, some of the smart people started to use these tools, what is free accessible to build application both based on this AI systems, you know, as an investor, you can generate, I don't know, whatever you want, processing data. With GPT-3, it's insane, fast, time, you know, there's always ideas how to generate revenue with this. It's not only actually about investing, but creating a tool where helping people where, you know, they will pay or whatever is the necessary requirement. Data is the money.
The AI tools for sure are obvious things. Like, so one, so smartphones were a big change in like Western or American productivity. We know that in terms of like, you know, the amount of like work that can be done in a certain period of time. So productivity, and the AI tools are going to be one big catalyst for the next 10 years of improving people's productivity, which then can be a catalyst for like, you know, the next stock market rally or whatever. So even though like AI may not be something that you might buy as like a stock or whatever, you could very much see like productivity of corporations or just the country at large or whatever increase. And that by itself could drive the next phase of like the next 10, 20 years of the economy, even without any other special discoveries.
Hey, Steffi,
pretty interesting.
Hey, guys, how are you doing? I just wanted to add something to your quantum discussion. So basically right now we don't have so many quantum algorithms that are actually kind of usable. We have the quantum Fourier transformation, we have an amplitude amplification, and something which is called quantum walks, which is basically like more of a stochastic probability distribution usage, which is it's very, let's say, it's very abstract at the moment what you can do. So the Fourier transformation is basically to break this like crypto stuff, right? The other thing, the amplitude amplification, is this Grover's algorithm where you could actually search big databases that was BlackRock is doing, right? So, and it actually basically provides a quadratic speed up of over normal algorithms. So there's a use case there for any algorithm, but it has to be a big computer. So you have to have a lot of qubits in any of these cases. And on these quantum walks, there where you go on biotech and all this stuff, right? So,
yeah. And by the way, Osprey, just for reference, reached 433.
Yeah,
qubits,
which is
the most recent IBM unit.
Quite a leap, by the way.
Yeah, it's a big leap, but not huge yet,
yes,
right? So for people's
and
understanding
you will
of
have
this,
to build a computer to a specific use case. That's the point, right?
Right. And so there's another thing too with quantum is that the error correction is not very good yet. So it's prone to errors very
yes,
heavily.
Yes, well,
right
it
now.
Depends on what you want to do. You know, some of these
yes.
things that you want to do, you can get by with a lot of errors because it doesn't really matter. For other things, it's very crucial that you get all the errors
right.
out, right?
So just for folks understanding, though, we're talking about like if you were to double qubits every year, you're talking about a time period of approximately 10 to 15 years to get to like the million plus qubit per device range, where it's like really, really super useful. So yeah, that's just for people's
yeah.
reference. Like when I'm buying like IBM stock, I'm not buying
and
the
thing
week
is
or whatever.
Probably
that's
located somewhere
term.
At IBM in some like earthquake proof room.
Yeah,
you know, it's not going to sit in your cell phone. Not in the next 20 years,
yeah.
you know? I mean, that's where we take.
Right. That's a more long term. Like hold for me. That's not something I'm buying because, like, you know, I think I'm going to make
yeah,
a quick buck.
Yeah, but
AI
is a completely different story. You know, that's a completely different story. I think we are on the brink to see a lot of adoption. I don't know if you saw that yesterday. I posted that actually China has even more patents than the US right now on AI, and it's because these idiots invested all the money into spying on their own citizens, right? Which is kind of funny, but they have actually. They develop more stuff in AI because of all the surveillance and the shit they're doing, right? So hopefully this could be put on a more civil use
yeah.
case. But I think
warfare is one of the biggest like use cases of these always
yeah,
with these types of technologies, whether it's defense people or whether it's like national security people or whatever in each country.
Yeah.
There is an arms race for AI and quantum for
yeah.
that matter.
So I just want to say, yeah. have a look out on what Chinese companies are doing. I'm sure someone will actually find a viable commercial product and will make some money on it. You know, so don't miss out on these tech stocks. If you hear something, they are probably pretty far into the whole
story.
Yeah?
That is, by the way, the reason I continue to watch Tesla, and when it gets crushed sufficiently enough, I'll get some because they are fairly ahead of a lot of other people in the AI, like self-driving car space. So that's one of the reason why, like, I don't fully fade them. They also produce actual cars, and their numbers are not horrific, even though they missed expectations. Stock price dropped today. I still will watch. You know, I think Tesla, like, I'll be happy with it closer to, like, I don't know, a PE ratio like closer to 20. So I might not ever buy it, but if it drops below a PE of 20, I think I'll pick up some Tesla at that point. But yeah, Hutch, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to give you an update. So I actually got some fills in an IRA, and I've been a lot of cash in IRA. And I think a lot of people are that are trying to be more savvy about trading. But how I put that cash to work is I sold some $27 OHI puts and some $26 OHI puts. If you remember, it's trading right, it's $27.97, it's trading at 28. Turns out I had already bought 100 shares of the stock. It was a little bit lower because it says I'm up 15 bucks on it. But basically, I committed to buying another 100 shares each at, you know, $2,700. I'm committing that much cash and $2,600 in an IRA. It's just sitting there doing nothing. And now I'm just
essentially. For which one, by the way? I missed that.
That OHI, that healthcare
okay.
REIT that was paying
yeah.
that 9% yield. But I'm basically getting half of that annual yield in like one's a February, one's a March, in like 50 days and 70 days. I'm getting that yield just to commit to DCA the money I have sitting dead in cash in my IRA.
That's pretty sharp. Yeah. Because you can get it even without waiting for the 10%. You're
yep.
getting it.
I'm getting it right now. And if it goes, I already have 100 shares, but if it goes lower, well, that's the CEFI DCA. Like I basically already bought my 100. Now I DCA 200.
I guess the difference here would be that if it doesn't go down, then you don't own it.
I don't own it, but at least I get some nice yield. Why I didn't own it, and I nibbled on my 100 shares lease. I didn't get 200 or 300 shares because that's what I have. I have another 100 at 27 and another 100 at 26. So I'm setting up my DCA and getting paid to set up my DCA. And maybe I'll get it, maybe I don't, but either way, I'm making money. And if it goes down past it, it was something I was going to buy anyway, and I wasn't going to get paid, right? So I'm actually reducing my risk by collecting some extra money.
So what's the what's the yield rate right now on the put if you get like a...
I can pull it up for you.
So you pick a number, like what if it was like 120 or something
what do you
like
mean,
that?
120 days?
The price of the stock.
Well, it just depends. Like if you want to give me something you're interested, that's around $120, like CRM, I can look at that. I can look at that. Let me pull that up. I was going to give you another boring one since we were talking about really good boring
stocks.
Sorry,
I was thinking of the wrong one. So this stock right now is at 28.
Yeah.
So let's say you wanted to commit to buy at a limit order of like, I don't know, like where is a sweet spot for.
Yeah. I can tell you. So you can't go way far down unless you're going to go way down in time. So really, if you want to make good yield, you kind of have to just plan your next leg or maybe two of the DCA. So I'll tell you what I actually did. And I did it during the close. I kind of did it wrong because I was scrambling. So just let me pull it up. Which one is it? Oh, that's the wrong account. I got multiple accounts. I use Interactive Brokers, by the way, which I've found to be it's a little bit clunky, but the margin rates are so good. Okay, so OHI, I sold the 27 put. So it's trading at 28. I sold the 27 put for March for $120. So essentially, I'm getting paid $120 divided by 27, the cash that I have sitting dead in my IRA. I'm getting 4.4% over the next 72 days to commit to buy another 100 shares for $2,700. You there?
Interesting. Yep. Got it.
So that's a nice little thing. You could do the 26s and probably get paid about the same if you brought it out to April. Right. So it's like the factors are time and price, right? Otherwise known as theta and delta with options. But ideally.
On Fidelity, do you have to be on like a specific options account for this?
No, you have to have permissions. You have to have options permissions, but you can definitely do this with Fidelity. Absolutely. You just need to call the broker, or go into the thing and just sign up for permissions. It takes about a day. And then you just go to the thing called the option chain. Like, it's too bad spaces don't have a visual component. Like, I would walk through this in real time and show you, like, as we're doing
yeah,
it. But
I know what you're I've seen the chains. I just haven't, like, in this particular platform that I'm on, haven't bothered to mess with it before.
Do this. We'll do another space. Like, figure it out with Fidelity. Call them. Figure out where they're comfortable. Doesn't matter whether I'm looking at IB, Interactive Brokers, and you're looking at Fidelity. We'll see the same data. So we can do another one on these calls when, you know, the best time to do it is when things are freaking bleeding, because it's like basically puts our insurance. So like somebody owns OHI and they're buying puts in case it keeps going down. So they're like buying insurance. Like if this goes down really, really low, I want to be able to put my stock to somebody else. And I'm like the insurance company. I'm like, cool, I'll sell you insurance on your OHI. Which means I have to put up I have to have the reserves to put up the $2,700 to pay $2,700 for 100 shares of OHI, regardless of what it's selling for. And so because of that, because I'm the insurance company, time works for me, right? And as price goes up and it, like the sky isn't falling, the value of that put, like I can kind of resell the insurance out on the free reinsurance market or whatever, it becomes less valuable. And sometimes I do that. Sometimes I close them out early when I've gotten like 75-80% of the profit. I won't so much do it. I'll do it mainly because I think it's going to come back down and I want to be able to do it again. And I won't have the capacity to do it again unless I free up that margin or that cash, if that makes sense.
Okay. Yeah, Mark.
Whales start selling at once. Yes.
Oh no, go ahead. I was gonna give one more boring one, but wait, the market's closed. Go ahead with the whales market cap.
Yeah, so it's like a game. If you want to trade, if you want to day trade, then that's your thing. There's a public wallet of everything. You can see of anonymous buyers of purchasing high amounts of polygons, high amounts of Doge and Mars, high amounts of Shiba Inu, high amounts of XYO. You can see these stuff in the public domain, but the names are just anonymous.
Yeah, and just to clarify, the things that I was describing are not trades. It is, I am selling puts, but I'm doing it for things that I don't mind owning long-term, if not forever. So it sounds like I'm doing some crazy degen trading stuff, but really I'm just using some degen-esque kind of tools to enhance a longer-term buy and hold strategy, which I think that's why I jumped in the space. That's what Sefi was trying to do. Bring it back to the opposite end of the spectrum, not Matic, not crypto, not whatever, but another very, very boring stock that I picked up a couple weeks ago. And it's not going to have good option juice because it just doesn't move. It's like IBM is Verizon. Verizon. Yeah. Verizon is.
I noticed that. What's yesterday?
The price on Verizon? Because I know Royce is a very low price. It's like a dollar, if not a couple cents. But who's buying Rolls Royces?
Yeah, I don't know if I want to do that in a recessionary environment. Verizon went down all the way to 34. I want to say I bought at like 37, 36. It's now up to 40. It went up today. I didn't do any of the selling puts. I just bought 100 shares at that 37. But it was yesterday when I wrote this, last night when I wrote this tweet at the close, it had a 6.6% dividend and a 9 PE. So that was just another kind of nice, boring one. And it's off. Like if you look at the 5-year lows, it was a turd in the punch bowl up in the 50s to 60s, like it just kind of ranging between 50s to 60s. And then it fell through in August. And so, you know, it looked like whatever, catching the falling knife when I paid at 37. And, now, you know, I thought maybe I am catching the falling knife.
Verizon tends to be one of the higher, I'm assuming higher margin, higher priced, cell phone / internet wireless subscriptions out there.
Premium. I think you're right.
Yeah. It's relatively premium compared to all the other things I've seen and used, right? So then the question is like, okay, if that's the case, is the premium user going to be negatively affected by sort of recession and therefore earnings get hit where people decide to go to like, you know,
am I going to switch my Verizon for Metro PCS during the recession
or something, right? And you know, maybe you won't. Like maybe what it is like people that people are fairly sticky with these things to some extent because like, you know, you bought Verizon in the first place because it has good coverage all over the country or whatever. So, which it generally does. So, I don't know, maybe it is a good buy. Like maybe you think the wreckage is mostly over or.
I actually thought kind of the opposite. So I have one T-Mobile phone and one Verizon phone just because when I'm on the go and on the move, I need to have a hotspot for each. And T-Mobile has been outperforming Verizon. And I've read in some before. I didn't do a bunch of news this time. I just saw the falling knife and I just stuck my hand out. But Verizon is a little bit behind in that their 5G stuff is a little bit outdated and T-Mobile's kind of taken the lead. What I thought of is they've been a leader before and they found a way to be a leader. They have a massive part of the market share. And it's kind of like what you were saying about IBM. Like it's not an easy game to just jump into. And even if you look at Sprint or a Metro PCS, what they're doing is they're just kind of outsourcing and piggybacking off the established networks of either a T-Mobile or a Verizon anyway. So it was just like, you know what? They're bleeding. They're getting punished right now.
A relatively small position there like might make sense anyway, because they, at this price, at least their dividend yield is like 6%+. That could always go down. 9 PE. Obviously.
Same with the 9 PE. It could be a 5. 9
PE when 6% is pretty decent.
I saw that and I was like, okay, thank you very much. And usually
that makes you wonder, you know, how some of these companies are going to branch out. You know, for example, like Comcast uses Verizon towers. And then, you know, you can think even further into like the entertainment industries, things like Netflix or just, you know, your standard cable, and how the average person is going to be utilizing those things, or maybe less so as you know, new options come about. So
you're thinking like maybe Verizon produces, like, say for example, content at some point.
Yeah, or you know, it's hard to,
like, their collabs with the NFL. They do a lot of collabs. Like, they're big enough where they do these collabs. Like for a while, you could watch NFL games only if you had Verizon. At that time, I didn't. I had AT&T and T-Mobile, and I was kind of jealous. So that was all part of my thinking. Is just like they're not going anywhere, and they have to kind of reinvent themselves and kind of reestablish themselves as a leader in the space. And they're getting punished. And at 6.6% dividend, with a big falling knife when it was ranging between 50 to 60, and now it's down to 37. I was like, I'll take it. It fell to kind of 36, 35-ish. Oh, I'm too early, and now it bounced 42 weeks later. And
are the ranges you're looking for generally, right? Like you could go for years and years sometimes, like the last 10 years, where it's hard to find prices at these levels, except outside the COVID crash situation. But like, what are the odds of a crash like that specifically happening? You don't have any clue, right? Like, yeah, you could have another crash like that and the market has a massive dump for some reason, but it's hard to bank on those. Like, you'd have to ask yourself, like, okay, assuming no other sort of like calamity happens, is this a pretty decent price to start getting in? It seems like the market general is starting to get there.
That's what I thought. And if it goes down further, like let's say it goes to like the high 20s or low 30s, I'm going to do the Cephi thing. I'm going to buy 200 shares. Right. And if I have to, I'm going to buy it off the margin to get the low price. And then as cash flow comes in, I'll use the cash flow to pay down the margin loan. Not recommended. Definitely riskier. You're increasing your exposure. But that was one of my big lessons or takeaways of 2022, is that the Cephi DCA, if you have the staying power, can help create generational wealth, whether it's crypto or whether it's TradFi stocks that are just beat up and you're buying them on sale. We're not going to get opportunities like this. They don't come around very often, right? It's like once in a decade. We happened to get it twice with COVID. I missed that one, right? Because I was scared. And this time I just forced myself to say, like, it's kind of like a Michael Gayed, you know, the guy, if you understand this. Basically, he says the end of the world is the bull case, where it's just like, if it truly is the end of the world, like, what difference does it make? Right, the end of the world is the bull case.
That's a good point. Always, the naysayers right? Should always think about that. Yeah,
yeah. The end of the world is the bull case.
So like the entire country's wrecked for some reason. Well, yeah. You know, you have bigger problems to worry about at that point.
Exactly. Anyway, so. My paper assets, my stock certificates, blips on a screen, whether it's crypto or stock, like who freaking cares? Right. I got some canned food. I got some lead and powder. I got some water. That's all I care about then. So that's, I'm just forcing myself to have the discipline and to do this dynamic DCA as best I can to take advantage of this opportunity. And again, for those of you with a lot of crypto losses, essentially typically trade some of this that equates to tax-free gains, because the losses that we're carrying over from 2022 get to absorb that. If you don't have gains to absorb it against it, you get a $3,000 income tax deduction every year for the rest of your life. But like, I'd rather just monetize that by buying some of this stuff on sale. Like if I wanted to, I could sell my Verizon right now. I made 10%. That's a tax-free gain for me. I'm not going to. I'd like to buy some more. But that's kind of the way I'm thinking through all this. I
decided to go ahead and like on Hutch's financial advice. No, I'm kidding. I decided to go ahead and just put a market order in for some Verizon for tomorrow on market open. I'm not too worried about the exact price, but just started grabbing some shares and just like taking advantage of that 6%+ dividend and kind of, and then, you know, of course, like I can get more when it goes down or whatever. So, because if it goes down,
it's on your real watch list.
I'll be really happy with the dividend, right? So like there's that benefit.
Yeah. Why don't we hit YOLO, and then I got another kind of old school name that's beat up. That's a little riskier, but interesting YOLO, story anyway.
Yep. Hey, what's up, man? I heard Hutch speaking, you know, and I found it really interesting what he was saying. I was doing a lot of the same stuff. Even though I'm in the United Kingdom, down here, we can't just open up a Robinhood account and just buy options. I've actually got Interactive Brokers as well. And I had to jump through a few hoops to get that. And then I got the options account. And I discovered the wheel strategy. That's what you were describing, I believe, Hutch. And and also got into crypto, but via a proxy on the stock market, where I was just buying Bitcoin miners. I first bought Mara when it was at $52. I was doing the cash secured put, and I was trying to collect like $200 in like 7 days, and then the stock just dropped like $10, and I lost like £800. But then I repeated the wheel strategy, and then I was selling covered calls, and then I was buying the dip on Mara as it went all the way down to $17, and then I saw it go all the way up to $83, and then I was selling covered calls, and then Mara went from $83, it's at $3.50 right now. But as it got down, instead of selling covered calls, what I did was just I just bought like puts, because I just thought, you know what, I'll just hedge it. And so I did a bit of that. And then right now, another thing that is that I also discovered via crypto was a Uniswap liquidity providing. It's really similar to selling covered calls. So covered calls, basically, if you need 100 shares to sell one call option, whether that be a weekly or a yearly or whatever. So that basically means if 100 shares of Google cost $8,900, you need $8,900 to sell one contract. And it's basically, you're basically providing $9,000 worth of capital. And then the person who buys the option contract, you sell him the strike price. And then he basically gets to keep the profits above the strike price, right? And so you're basically providing that that capital for the guy who's buying a weekly or a two-weekly or a monthly contract to, you know, play his game. And as the price doesn't reach that, as the theta decays, the contract that you've sold, it just decays. And basically, you've sold it for like, you know, I think it's $170 a week. And in that 7 days, if it doesn't reach that strike price, that goes to zero. And that's just because you've sold it. It's just your profit sort of thing. So you basically just lower your cost basis. If you collect $170 on Google every week, in a year, I believe that's like, you know, $6,000 or whatever. And obviously the price moves up and down. But are you familiar with the liquidity providing on Uniswap? Is anyone familiar with that?
Yeah. What about it?
You used to do it on Terra. Haven't done it on Uniswap, but sounds interesting. I'm not ready to go there yet. But if when things bleed even more, I can see myself getting it in. I used to enjoy LP yields and, you know, buying, basically having the LP dollar cost average me or rotate me into the whatever's beaten up a little bit more, as long as I like both parts of the pair.
Both parts of the pair. Yeah. So so there used to be something called V2. And Uniswap, they got V3, and they got the patent on that, and they're going to release that to all the other people who want to copy it. But at the minute, it's just with the Uniswap, and it's basically you select. So obviously, you got say you got $10,000 in a pool, and then and whatever fees it collects. What happens with V3 is you concentrate the liquidity. So say, for example, you know, Ethereum is like $1,000 and you got one Ethereum, you create a concentrated range that could be like $10 or $5. And each time it goes in that range, the tighter you make the range, you collect a majority of the fees. And it's sort of like, you're giving up the upside, but you collect those fees when the price goes in that range. And plus, because crypto is 24 hours, unlike the options where you're unable to make adjustments, because you'll sell an option and then the next day there'll be a big gap up or down, and then you've got to make adjustments. But whereas in crypto, you can just keep making adjustments. And I use Arbitrum, what is like a layer two of Ethereum. So instead of spending like, you know, $10 on a smart contract, it costs like 8 cents to 20 cents. And the fees are like super cheap. If you do like 1,000 transactions a month, it costs like $100. And if you double your money, you still just pay the same fees. Your fees don't go up based on, cause you've got more money, cause you just pay for the signed contracts. Elsa. What's up, buddy?
I just wanted to say thank you for the space, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
We'll see you around.
You have fun.
Thank you. Take care.
Cool. Hey, Bruce, what's up?
Hey.
Oh, yeah, Hutch, you had one more sock to mention.
Yeah, so another kind of boring one that I think is in value zone is not a financial advice, but it's Tyson Foods, the chicken stock. It's in that one tweet I have up in the nest where I show the 5-year chart. It's like, it's way down, but it's down to like a 6-something PE with a 3% dividend. And not to say that it couldn't fall further, but it's something like, if you just consider at the supermarket, chicken really hasn't seen kind of the effects, or they haven't really raised their pricing power like beef, because they're kind of whatever, they're playing second fiddle. And I think as with inflation, as it continues to, they will be able to capitalize off the higher margins. So that's something that I picked up a little bit of. I don't remember the options being really super juicy, but just kind of again, I'm always trying to be diversified and have different plays. And I feel like food prices in general are going to go higher for everybody. The other one that in that kind of sector is
that. Price of that stock is just not too high above like the COVID crash. And I know like during that, Tyson and some of these other like people that like packaged meats and whatever got into trouble, because I had to deal with some of the people that work at those plants and things. That might be interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So CTVA is another one. They do international seed and crop protection. So I was really looking for stocks that could benefit from pricing power of food in general, and we're all going to feel the effects at the checkout line in the supermarket. So again, like I'm trying to just position some of my assets to be on the business end of that side of the deal. So that's another one that's already done well for me, and that's one I think I'll probably try and sell a put for. Everybody has to do their own research for it.
Repeat that ticker again.
Yeah, Charlie, Tom, Victor, Allen, CTVA.
Assertive Solutions. Corteva, is that who they are?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'll look into them.
Yep.
Interesting. I don't know that's that whole industry or whatever at all. So
me neither. It's kind of, it's boring. It's not normal. But again, I'm always just trying to get little different building blocks, so I'm less likely to get liquidated when I do degen stuff with the options on margin. So it's really, really important to me to have, you know, less correlated. It's really, really hard to get non-correlated asset class, but to get less correlated. So like, if you look at my whole tweet this of this stuff.
This isn't correlated with the broader market at all. It's done quite well, actually.
Right. It's done well. And that's why I'm wondering if I was a little too late to it. But that's why I just kind of nibbled, and I would be interested in selling puts, because I don't think we're done with inflation. Like to Hero's point. You know, I think what they're going to have to do is they're going to have to pivot and lower rates. And then in which case that'll get punished a little bit. And that's a great time for me to buy more, because I know they're going to have to raise again in the future. They're going to have to do this dance between, you know, bludgeoning inflation with higher interest rates and then going, oh, shit, we're killing the economy. Let's lower. And they're just going to do that like they did in the 70s and the 80s. If you look at it, it's just a joke. So I like having these kind of non-correlated things and buying stuff on sale. I think Tyson is a better deal, but I think the CTVA is not going anywhere. So that's kind of more of something I have and would be willing to go deeper.
They own Pioneer, I think, because it's either a subsidiary or a product. And I think that's an agricultural product that's, I recognize the name, which means something, because like, I don't recognize many agricultural names. I think they're, I don't remember what they produce, is seed or something like that, maybe Pioneer. Anyway,
yeah, that's kind of their thing. It's not my kind of sweet spot. I was just kind of digging deep, and I saw a lot of names in the sector, and these are the two that just looked interesting to me.
Another one, Hutch, I haven't looked at recently, was Potash. Like the ticker is POT, and
yeah, pot.
It's on the Canadian market usually.
I want to say I saw that when I was looking, and there was something I didn't like, but maybe I'll. Bruce jumped up here and probably wants to talk. Maybe I'll just kind of dig into the financials and try and familiarize myself with why I didn't end up pulling the trigger on it.
Maybe, well, Potash used to be a stock on the market. Maybe they got bought out. I haven't looked at it in a very long time, but and Potash for food is like one of those like scarcity things that is like as good as gold in some sense. Like it's always needed for agricultural fertilizer and everything else. But I don't know like if that's still a publicly traded company, but it used to be called POT, Potash. I believe it was out of Canada before, but I don't know what's happened to it. Anyway, but that's another commodity.
They got bought out by Mosaic. That's what it was.
Oh, that's so what it was. Yeah.
And Mosaic. And Mosaic, I did look at Mosaic, and for some reason, I didn't love it.
Just FYI, your podcast, POT or whatever, it got bought out a long time ago.
Yeah, I remember that I remember hearing that a long time ago. But thanks. Yeah, perfect.
I wanted to ask Hutch a quick question. Hutch, are you looking at any stocks that you think might collapse? Like I was looking at John Deere. It seems to be at a closer to the 52-week high opposed to the 52-week low. The 52-week low is $250.
Looking for stuff to short, you're saying? Like specifically looking to short stuff?
More like you buy some out of the money put options.
And same thing. Yeah.
What would be cheap? Because there's still some stocks out there that have a high P ratios.
Yeah,
and, they just haven't collapsed yet.
So I'll tell you how I feel about that. I don't like to be a net buyer. It seems like
you want to build.
It's not so that. So like I'll tell you, I did make a short play. And what I did is I sold some call spreads on the QQQ, but I like to be on the selling side of options because it was what I brought up earlier. When you're buying options, you're kind of the sucker. And I'm not saying you personally, but you're kind of the sucker in the transaction and that time's working against you. So not only do you need a move in the direction you want, you need a move quickly. Like you can get the move you want. And if you don't get it quick enough, you won't even make money or you won't make as much money as if you would have just shorted the stock. So you had brought up the wheel strategy. You could do almost a reverse. And so I actually did do some of that where I sold some QQQ call spreads, meaning I sold a call, but then bought a call above it just to hedge myself in case it moons. Cause in bear market rallies, it can just moon right through your shit and you could just get wrecked like getting run over by a freight train. And I'll do that to collect some premium and be on the right side of the time. And then I may use that premium cause that's like found money. I'll use that premium to buy a put, but I cringe whenever I buy a put. I just feel like a sucker. It's like I just feel like I'm on the losing end of things. So I have just sold stuff short, just straight sold it short, and then that way I don't have the theta or the time decay working against me. But no, I haven't spent a lot of time on that. What I would do again is when tech rallies, I don't think it's done feeling pain. And I'd probably just do what I did again and just do the Qs. The other thing I would do for super short term, and I did some of that, is do SQQQ, not a recommendation. This is a big boy play because it's a triple short. So essentially they're doing all the options and future stuff behind the scenes for me. But if it doesn't go the direction you want quickly, you lose more than you stand to gain. And the last time that the NASDAQ peak, I want to say it was like two and a half weeks ago, I just saw it and I just thought like it was at like 40, 42 or whatever. I was like, you know what? I think this thing's going down. So I bought about $10,000 worth in an IRA and I bought $5,000 worth in my taxable account. And I think I made like whatever, like 1500 in the IRA and 750 in the other one. And I just scalped it. Like it was like a 2 or 3 day trade. I just scalped it and took it. So that's what I would look to do. But if you see stuff that you think is overpriced, I will look at Deere. I'm open to that. Go ahead.
Before we jump too far off that, like on Mosaic for Potash, like their PDE is really compressed, like down to like 4-ish. And they have like a 1-2% yield. So that looks reasonable at this point too, in terms of overall support price and everything else. It's dribbled down like as just kind of like a general sell off and no major like capitulation moves or anything.
Something spooked me because I saw before, like when I was looking at CTVA and I was looking at Tyson. Oh, I know what it is. No, that's not it either. I'm going to figure out what it was. But I was looking at the financials and something where I was like, I don't know if I like this. I'll see if I can find it.
Yeah, I got a little bit just to kind of like dip my toes in it. And Just keep an eye on things.
So for Potash, there's BHP as well as Intrepid Potash, IP, and then CF Industries, and then Mosaic.
Yeah, maybe
Jeff,
I'll just...
Jeff, you sound like you're in a jar. Like I think what you have to add is awesome, but you sound like you're in a jar with the lid on it somewhere far away.
Yeah, your sound quality is abysmal for some reason.
Sorry, guys, can you hear me now?
It's like you took the lid off the jar now.
I'm in a car, but I invest in private potash companies. I actually own 10% of a company, so I kind of follow them pretty closely. But you guys are on the right path.
Jeff, well, would you think this is an area worth getting into at these prices or no?
I'll have to look at Mosaic. They just stopped operating one of their mines. They shut down a mine, so they took more supply offline. And remember, 45% of the world's potash comes from Belarus and Ukraine. But that potash is still getting onto the market, so we'll see what happens in this coming year, 2023.
Is there stuff in the publicly traded space that you like, or you think, it, at the very least, not financial advice, but you just put on a watch list? Like I was mentioning CTVA, I kind of like them, but is there stuff that you would like since you're kind of deep in the space? For me, it was just like, I need a couple names in the food fertilizer space. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I would look at Intrepid. It's been hit the hardest. IPI, I would look at that. They're obviously having troubles with their mines as well. So Intrepid and Mosaic is probably the two I'd look at and see if Industries.
Cool, thanks.
Hey Hutch, I just wanted to add to your point that the question that you answered of mine. I'm actually in the same boat. I actually believe collecting data is much better, but I'm actually sort of collecting data in the crypto space. So I'm collecting fees, even though it's not called, it's not options, it's just fees. But one of the things, so in the stock market, what I'm looking to do is just like get leaps. But so instead of just buying like a year out leap, what I was going to do is just, first buy 3 months. And if the price goes against me, and then I keep doing something called a call roll. It's called a call roll. So if the price goes against you, that's when you roll the dates forward, you know, opposed to.
Out in time.
Yeah.
It's again, I hate being on the sucker side of the options. It's a perfectly viable strategy. And here's what it's great for. What it's great for is if you're trying to leverage or control a lot for a little bit of money, then it's worth taking the worst of it and paying that time premium and paying the extra premium. When I used to buy sometimes one or two strikes into the money to try and reduce it. Every time I just kind of do the math, I just go, you know what? I hate it. And so if I'm going to do that, like what I would do with your call rolls is I might sell a bull call spread. I might sell a slightly out of the money put and then buy a put below it. So I reduce my risk, but at least I'm net collecting that money. And then whatever I collect, then I'll go buy that lottery ticket, that out of the money leap call, or whatever that is, because it's financed by me at least being on the winning side of the options trade. Does that make sense?
No, totally. And what I wanted to just make clear was like, I wanted to do that with a little bit of my money, because like I was looking at like Google and I was thinking, you know, the all time highs were $150. So maybe if I buy the $150 strike price, it might take 5 years to get there. Do you know what I mean? So not do it with all your money, just do it with a little bit of your money. And just keep and just have like a long data, have it long dated. So that's where you pay the less data, you know?
You're right. Yeah, you get a little bit of deal on that data if you commit to a long time. And yeah, if you do enough lottery tickets, especially in diversified industries and everything else, then you're hoping that your big winners will make up for the ones that, don't perform. Like you might even be right on the ones that don't perform, but they just didn't perform in time or as much as you hoped.
Exactly.
And so that's what I don't like about buying options or buying time. But I understand the strategy, and
it could take 5 years for it to materialize. Just do it with a smaller a portion of your portfolio. Don't, if you just do it with all your money and it doesn't materialize, then you've just lost so much data. You know, you just paid a lot of data, right?
Yeah, like to kind of put that in perspective for people that don't know what theta is, theta means time decay. And so when you buy options, like the option becomes worth less the closer. Like, so if you bought like an April option, there's more premium there than if you bought a February or January option. And the difference, it could be for the same price option, that time decay is what I like to profit off of by selling it. But in hanging out in the TradFi spaces, they really hate crypto and they hate Bitcoin. And I heard it put by some of the maxis, because it's weird. Like in December, there was some really big mashups between like full-blown Bitcoin maxis and the TradFi people. And it was like warfare, like Bitcoin, sucks. It's a scam. And it went on for like a week. And some of the guys actually kind of saw the light. And I'm sorry, I got a call. What the argument that one of the Bitcoin maxis said about Bitcoin is like, look, if you're kind of concerned about this privacy concern, if you're concerned about this money printing, if you think at all that like kind of blockchain and decentralized money will ever tickle the fancy of the public, really Bitcoin is a no theta. It's a zero theta alternative asset class bet, right? It's like an option that doesn't expire, that whatever, they're going to make CBDCs and they're going to kind of indoctrinate the public to blockchain anyway. And then the public will eventually go, oh, you know what? I want something fully decentralized and that nobody knows anything about. And that's what Bitcoin is. And I thought that was really, really compelling. But it was interesting to me that they use that term theta, you know, you don't have time to keep working against you.
Yeah. The thing with me is the options people don't like me because I like crypto, and the crypto people don't like me because I like options. Nobody likes me. So maybe you're the only person that likes me, you know?
You know, it's
Yolo, I hate you completely. Don't worry.
It's that PFP. That's what it is. That thing's creepy. I think I realized this in the Luna space, or in the Luna days, that human beings by nature are tribalistic. Like you can look back to like anthropology class or whatever, the, you know, Ottomans versus the whoever. You can look at like the ETH people versus the Luna people versus the Maxis. Like people want to belong to something. They want to kind of like, they feel better when they're in little mini tribes. And so it's so much easier like to have that common enemy, like they talk about in marketing. And it's like, one thing I realize is like, what I love about these spaces is I like to have differing opinions because I can learn something and I can also challenge my own internal views. And I can find something that goes that where I say, you know what, that makes sense. I think I need to explore that a little bit further. I think I need to examine my own limiting beliefs about this tribe or this asset class or whatever. And I think if everybody kind of did that and had a little more open-mindedness, everything would be a lot more productive. It seems like people come on spaces, like when I hear it, whether it's crypto or TradFi or whatever, people come on spaces with an axe to grind. And it's just, it's kind of like on Facebook, right? Like during election time or whatever, it's like, nobody's even listening, right? Just like wants to like, whatever. They want to just like publicly spout their axe to grind and
scream into the void.
Yeah, I've actually gotten a lot of value jumping into spaces where I may not totally agree with everything, but like finding the similarities and not the differences, and becoming a lot more well-rounded as an investor as a result. That's really what we're trying to do here.
Yeah, it's just like in the UK, we have like betting shops where you go and bet on a football team. I'm telling you, the stock market or this crypto stuff is exactly the same. You're just betting on your football team and you want to fight the other guy who's on the other team. You know, it's exactly
the same. Wear the right T-shirt, man. That's the
right T-shirt. Exactly.
Yeah. I think Bosco had some comment before we can kind of get into what Bruce wants to do next.
Hey, what's up,
Bosco? What's up?
I just had a quick question. So I've been following Galaxy for quite some time now, and just watching it just burn and crash a little bit. I mean, from up to like, I think it was like at 20s and all that. But I mean, now it's at a pretty dang good price point, and the PE is like around 3. What do you?
I mentioned earlier today. I have no idea necessarily whether they're going to do well. It is a bet on the crypto space and a lot of little small projects that they buy. I did get some this morning, by the way, because I felt like, well, it looked like it's crushed enough, and some people yesterday recommended it or just threw it out there, and just I just wasn't sure what I was going to get, and I was like, oh, I'll get a little bit of that. So I didn't go very heavy, tiny little position, but I don't know like how much revenue. So when they talk about price to earnings, I'm assuming they're talking about trading earnings. I'm not entirely sure like where all Galaxy Digital makes their money. I do know that after Novogratz dumped on the Terra community,
at the top and then like created a tattoo about it and then sort of like disappeared from Twitter for the rest of eternity. It seems like he's like, I don't, he hasn't said anything lately. I don't, at least not as far as I know. I thought that whole thing was a little bit suspect, but at the same time, I mean, the company still runs. I don't know, like, if it's a great option as far as like, let's say you're already crypto heavy. Do you really want to buy more crypto shit? That's the argument against like Coin or, you know, Galaxy or something like that. Maybe if you're already heavy crypto, you shouldn't get any more. But I bought a tiny amount just to keep an eye on them. That's pretty much it.
Gotcha. Thanks, dude.
Yeah, yeah. Bruce, what's your story today?
Oh, I'm just here to listen. I'm here to take in the information, to absorb it, to have my own opinions. I won't share them. I have various opinions and judgments about what's been said. But I think, as Hutch said, I think we need to try and move towards the end of tribalism and a new future where we start to listen to each other, even if we disagree. So what I'm going to do today is I'm going to hold back and I'm going to mute myself and I'm going to seethe in silence.
That's no fun.
I have a very, very specific agenda based on our prior conversation. So you're going to just like bite your tongue today. Is that what you're thinking?
I'm going to scream, but I'm going to do it with my microphone muted. Like if somebody says something behind my microphone, I'm going to be like, you fucking idiot. I wish you'd shut the fuck up. I'm going to go nuts, but I'm going to keep myself muted so you can't hear it.
That sounds reasonable. That's probably what everyone does in here anyway.
I was going to say, that's like 99.9% of social media.
Coach doesn't realize that because he's never done that before. But wow, I don't believe you'll be able to do it, Coach.
Doing it now.
I actually have to jump here. I have to check in with an employee before he takes off on Central Time. But if Steffi, if you're doing a marathon space, this has been enjoyable. And if you pick up any tips while I'm gone, that's really what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to build up my shopping list, whether or not it's something I want to buy now or not, just kind of develop my shopping list, because that's what I do. When cash flow comes in, see what's on sale, whether it be a stock from a sector, whether it be physical metals, whether it be crypto, I like to buy whatever's like the deepest deal on sale is with the available cash flow I have. So do tell, please share, and I'll be back a little bit later if you guys are still going.
Sounds good, man. Thanks for being here today.
Yep. Yeah.
A lot of useful picks and things, and I bought some things because Hutch made me do it, by the way.
Yeah,
I have this recorded. Like, for the SEC and everybody else. Yeah, you heard him.
There you go. Yeah, like I actually clicked the button. I actually clicked the button. I position size and everything. Yeah. No, it's one of the things I love about you, Steffi.
Password. You push all the buttons. I'm pretty sure that's legal.
Well, I'm going to use that face technology where, like, I get that and I just have access to all your everything. But no, that's one of the things I love about you. Like, we used to share some really crazy degen stuff, but you know, the people that would share the most, you know, is you and I and Shigio, the most degen stuff. Like, we never got mad at anybody. We never got mad at each other. We never got mad at Doquan. We never got mad at Novogratz. Like, we were big boys, right? We're the ones that press the buttons. We're the one that made our decisions. And that's what these spaces are, to share information and to hopefully take the echo chamberness out of it, to really ask the hard questions, you know, test and measure what exactly is going on, share differing opinions.
It is important to note who is still actually like here, right? Like you know, people can call you, you know, people can say pumper or shiller or whatever the hell they want, but at the end of the day, like, the people who are really in it are in it, like, when the house is burning down, is they're in it when it's going up, and we don't really, like, we don't abandon
it. Still showing your face. Yeah, still showing your face.
Like, you know, you can make some wrong calls or things go sideways, whatever. But like,
the people, like, I think the people who are man up, the people who are still here are either the most wise and grounded and rational,
or completely retarded,
or they have the biggest, most dysfunctional case of Stockholm syndrome in the universe. Like, there's nothing in
between. It's probably both. Yeah, it's I'm probably the combo there, but you know,
yeah,
I got nowhere else to go. And just a quick update on Shigio. I did talk to him the other day. We just had a personal chat on Signal, and he's coming up with some really cool stuff with the options stuff. It's not so much like picking direction, but his whole thing is just collecting that time premium. And if you look at his feed, he's put out some tweets, but he's got some really, really cool stuff coming out. So I know he hasn't been super, super active because he's, like most of us, been licking his wounds and rebuilding, but he's got some cool stuff. And it's kind of the same thing, like, hey, there's opportunities to make money, whether it's TradFi or DeFi. Like, don't discount any of them, and open your mind, come on these spaces to get educated on what's possible and what works for you, do it, and what doesn't, you know, just leave it behind.
Yeah, speaking of which, like, catch you later, Hutch, if you have to go. But Bruce, like, what are any of your bots that are running particularly successful that you're happy with or whatever?
I haven't really been
your Bitsgap bots that you have running on Binance.
I haven't been focusing on it lately. I stopped a few Bitsgap ones after the three commas hack, because there's that risk always, like API being compromised. Like, it is a business that can be hacked. There is potential.
But that was three commas APIs with who? Coinbase, I think?
Well, I mean, if whoever hacks the website, then they can control your API, which they can use to buy and sell. They can't withdraw, but they can buy and sell. So they can, for instance, put a huge long on, I don't know, like whatever, Sol or something.
Yeah, and just wreck you on some stupid. Yeah.
So they can market manipulate and make a fuckload of money with your money. Not receiving it directly. It's quite interesting. There've been a few cases of this.
So you shut some of your bots down for that reason? Like, do you have any running right now, or is it like
I don't think I have any running right now. I'm just kind of stacking Luna and Atom and a few other things, but nothing too crazy.
Yeah, there's not sufficient volatility right now either to do a lot of for a bot to make a lot of trades, unless you really trade in a very low range, in which case I suppose you could. But without the margin bot, that might not make any sense.
Yeah,
at this level. And it's like, there's nothing really, really strongly convincing, like with all this DCG and Genesis and like Grayscale Trust and all the other shenanigans going on. There's not an obvious, like, this is a pretty long duration for a downward trend in a crypto market, by the way. As far as like the from top and just go like a 45 degree angle straight down kind of thing. It's a pretty rapid decline compared to some of the previous times. So it does make you a bit nervous. The other thing too is like the crypto adoption thesis. Like, if the adoption is as good as we would like it to be, you would think that, like Bitcoin generally wouldn't be this low at this stage in the game. And it's like you're getting retests of these crazy long moving averages, which, you know, obviously says this is the time to buy, but it also could be like the long bleed that could last for who knows how long. So who the hell, like, it's tough to say. Atom looks more appealing just because like its yield rate, inflationary yield rate has like sustained. Yeah. And like the thing too is like, do we sell some of that? Like the question is like, so when we have these little pops, right? Like maybe it goes to like, you know, 10, 20 today or whatever. I moved a little bit of the yield to KuCoin because I was like, maybe I'll just sell it and then buy it back lower if it goes down. And then have that possibility of having some cash from that yield. Because when it's staked, like most of mine is staked or whatever. So on my different staking accounts, like if I have all this, I can't sell it immediately, even if they have a sudden increase. So it's not available to play with. And then like the other thing is, do you take your yield and do you short using your yield? Because that way you're like additionally like hedging against a drop or something.
I think one thing that I've quite liked is, you know, with validators, I don't really have to worry too much about investment anymore. So for instance, if I'm earning a degree of Luna from my Luna validator or whatever, let's say I'm earning, I don't know, 200 Luna a week or something like that from the Luna validator, it will pretty much always be 200 Luna a week, right? So like, I don't really have to worry if the price goes vastly up. Like, I haven't really missed it because I'm constantly buying in, or I'm constantly earning the same rate in Luna. You see what I mean? So it's like, I think that is what
it's the same as buying it, pretty much, right?
at that point because you're earning it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, the point is, you didn't, unless you convert it to
not,
cash.
It's the point is, it's not dollar value, right? So, like, I'm earning 200 Luna now, but I'll also earn 200 Luna when it's $100 or whatever. It'll pretty much be the same, assuming that delegations don't change too much, or I'll be more creative on average than most people. So it's kind of like I don't really need to worry too much. If you run like this, maybe running validators is like the cheat code to the game, where you don't need to worry too much about when you invest, because like worst case, you're still earning a percentage of that, the yield in the quantity of Luna tokens or whatever tokens.
So right now, like you feel like with the level of delegations that you have, with the price of the coins and such, you feel like you're having to put a lot of money in for expenses at this point, or you feel like you're way above expense? Like, how much above expenses are you at this point? Like, are you making double what your expenses are, or like anything close to that?
It's nothing exceptional now, but I don't expect it to go too much lower. Lunk is a bit of a dubious one, right? Because it's a limited rewards pool, and that'll become inflationary, and that's not a problem, but it might be a problem to the Lunk community. You don't understand that most chains are inflationary, and it's just how it works. So I don't know what's going to happen with that, but certainly other things are fine. But yeah, it's like it's more than breaking in. Slowly.
Yeah, in these kind of like bear market rallies and things, you could see a pretty sizable move of a lot of things. It's like everyone's depressed, it looks all terrible, but then all of a sudden like an atom could go from like a 10 to 30 and like, you know, in like within months, and you're just shocked. You're like, what the hell's going on?
Yeah.
And people get euphoric during that time as well, but like I think it's way more likely if there's any kind of rally, it'll be like maybe a 50% to the top or something like that. But to like, yeah, there's no obvious reason to go straight to the top, unless the exception to that would be there's a lot of cash on the sidelines now, and there will probably be a few winners that are more positive than a lot of others. So like, I think you're going to see a bit more decorrelation where you'll see some winners do really well. You know, think back to like how, I don't know, Chainlink or something, and I think it was 2018 or 2019, like took off first. You'll have some of these like you'll have some coins, I think, that will just suddenly just take off for no reason at all. And like sort of leave things behind in the dust. The question is like, which of those is it going to be? And I think, I don't know, it seems like among big players and whatever, there's a reasonable amount of respect for Cosmos. So that's good. Like Vitalik mentioned it briefly and a few other folks. So like there's this ongoing kind of dribble of attention that I'm not sure every chain has. Especially like in the layer one kind of space, there's just not very many that are super, super compelling.
Yeah. I'm still a big fan of Luna, to be honest. It's probably delusional, and I probably have a weird devotion to Lord Doquan or whatever. But for me, there seem to be so many limiter valves on the thing. Like, you know, last 2 days I've been talking about the warning label or whatever, but it's kind of symbolic, right? It's like, there are so many little factors that can just be removed in a very quick amount of time. And when that happens, it should be enormously beneficial. So like CZ's judgment with his little warning label, or some major player talking out, or the Genesis books being released, or whatever. It's like there's no other thing with so many, I don't know, so many like suppressive forces that just aren't valid.
There's also very little connectivity between Luna now and everything else. So I think it's relatively decorrelated.
Yeah.
So it may do some interesting things completely unrelated to everyone else. Or
you know what's interesting now?
Just Sophie, because other things go down, it may
what's
not.
What's interesting now is Lunk appears to be a leverage bet on Luna. Have you looked at the charts and everything? Whenever Luna moves, Lunk moves more. So it's like a weird situation where it's the bots. It's like, okay, so the bots are trading or whatever, or the dimensions are trading both Terra coins, but then the Lunk community is more responsive to those things, and they start aping in whenever it starts going up.
Yeah, which is weird, because like usually the lower market cap thing, which in this case is Luna, usually does that, not the other way around. So that is a strange
pure phenomenon. Demographics, right? And pure engagement and stuff like that. I've watched it a few times. Luna going up like 5% and then just trailing slightly behind it in time. Lunk will go up like 10%. It's kind of weird, like this, but it's good for us, right? Because the better that Luna does, the more it benefits Lunk, and like that's clear now, and they're correlated forever. So this twin moons scenario is really the way they're deeply enmeshed into each other. So it's like the narrative is like, whatever helps Luna will also help Lunk. So Lunk community, please help us out.
Oh, by the way, have you heard from Doe again the last couple of weeks? Like, I tweeted you and him about like my sort of like narrative approach, and he didn't respond back.
He sent me a nice Happy New Year message, and I asked the other people in GT Capital and some other groups, and apparently they didn't receive one. So I've been selected specially, which is nice.
You got like a little New Year's, like a little bottle of wine or something.
No, just a nice kind of love note, like Happy New Year. Hope you're well. Good. I said you too. You two alt, as in like a Twitter alt. and then I told him how proud of him I was. I said, like, I think you and TFL have done really well in the chaos and the stress and everything. But you can see, I think with Luna as well, like you can see how politically things are shifting. Like I think a lot of the Cosmos guys, Jacob and other people are kind of thinking like they're kind of working out what happened now, and they're quite supportive. And you can also see, I think about 2 months ago, I described it like a fungus, right? Kind of like a fungus spreading out through the cosmos. I think that's what's going to happen. I think when the station wallet comes out and it starts to provide more and more usefulness to all other chains, they're suddenly all going to get on board. Like it creates this...
We don't have a date on that yet, I think.
Jared said the final, kind of a weird thing he said. He said the final 3 weeks of January. I'm like, what? It's like kind of a weird, but yeah, like the final 3 weeks of January. He said it's already though. He said that, and also in other conversations with Doe and stuff, it's been said that a lot of things are ready. It's just a question of when rolling it out. And other people I've talked to have said one of the major factors is actually TFL and Doe buying up the supply while the prices are low. So it's kind of like whenever Doe presses the button is when it goes up.
I wonder what the like optimal button pressing range is for actually buying a lot more. Because we're like at $1.30, I think, right now. I
was told they have orders from $2 down to $1. And I was also told...
They just have a scaling in.
Yeah, and I was also told that... that they're not trying to buy too much, like no more than about 10% of supply, because otherwise you don't want to introduce the same thing as last time.
You wind up, yep, exactly.
I think you need to be careful here. I think you need to be careful with what you're saying in the public recorded Twitter space.
No, it's fine. Like, it's all fiction.
There are lots of people
listening. It's all fiction. But,
yeah, we're just making this. We have no idea. We're just nobody. We're a mouse and a little boy.
Have you looked at who we are? I'm just a mouse. But yeah, like you can, but obviously that's only the public side of it, right? Secretly, I'm sure Do Kwon is buying up all of supply.
If I were him, I would be buying quality projects like Litecoin and Ethereum Classic and Bitcoin Cash.
Mm. You kind of want a guardian character. Like we talk about the downside of centralization or a certain validators or entities having an enormous amount of supply. But we kind of feel safe if Daddy Do Kwon has a huge amount of supply, right? Like that's kind of a weird safety factor that he can protect the chain. He can start to shuffle his delegations up. He can do whatever is right. Like a guardian, like a Batman kind of character, Asian Batman. That's how I see it.
Yeah. Maybe like we could discuss all the different, it's weird. This is a moment of deja vu for me. I actually thought to myself a couple of days ago, we should do a spaces about if you had a Batman utility belt, like what would each of us have in it? But now that you've brought up Do Kwon being Batman, what do you think is in Do Kwon's utility belt? Like, does he have like a grappling hook? Is he going to like, you know, climb a building?
You mean if Do Kwon was a real superhero?
Or just like, I don't know, whatever. Just like, Do Kwon Batman is going to do what?
precisely with his powers here. He's going to take his Luna and, like, I don't know, end world hunger or something. What? Like, what is he going to do?
I don't know. I think Pantera should come up and talk rather than be so avoidant sitting down there, meek and avoidant and
yeah, he would know the answers to these things, I would think.
I imagine he'd walk around the streets of Busan and he would save people in financial distress, in loan shops and the homeless. He'd just walk around with a big, warm, welcoming smile. He looked down at a homeless man asking for lunch and he said, "Here, don't take lunch. Here, have $1 million. And he just handed him a wad of cash and then he'd continue walking. That's how I picture Dokwon.
Do we know if there's any like court dates or anything for the supposed like securities violations in Korea or whatever? The last I heard from Do was when he said, well, a couple of judges basically said that it's okay for him not to be brought in, you know, or arrested or something like that, so long as the company is showing up for their thing. Because technically, the legal case, I believe, if there whatever is something to do with the capital law there, which yeah. is something to do with securities,
capital,
like kind of like
capital
the SEC.
Markets law violation.
Yeah, so this would be something that like the company would handle, but not necessarily specifically the owner or founder is the only one.
No, and it's also just responsible like, necessarily unprecedented. And probably doesn't apply. I read one of the, I don't know how accurate this was, but I read one of the summary statements that had been translated from Korea, from Korean. Korean is one of the languages of Asia. It's a language that people in Korea speak with symbols and words. They speak a language over there. And they also eat Korean chicken and stuff like that. It's the kind of things they do. And the summary statement said that one of the reasons that the arrest warrant had been issued was because he was not in the country. In fact, it quoted it as the major reason. So the arrest warrant was issued because he's not in the country as a reason. And like only a partial amount, a minority amount, was to do with the capital law violation, capital markets law violation, which is kind of a weird thing. Didn't really make sense.
Yeah, that whole Red Notice thing was all a sham.
That was all fake, yeah.
That's an interesting, like a very good historical reference, by the way, for the level of sort of like news manipulation in crypto markets at some level. And I don't think it was just simply like, yeah, it was some of these type of things, as you've seen, like you might say something on Twitter and you get quoted on some random bullshit website. But this was like quoted again on like Bloomberg and other big institutional things. So it's like soon as some journalist picks up something like this, they might post it with little evidence sometimes. But they also, I wonder though, if some of these things get sent to so-called bona fide institutions like Bloomberg by people like FTX who have a connection with them, right? Where they as a so-called legit, you know, company, this is back in May, of course. They can get access and like provide leaks, you know?
Yeah, it's a schizophrenic's worst nightmare. This whole industry wasn't the block just like owned by FTX essentially.
Well, yeah, there was that too. Yeah,
it's all horseshit.
A combination of people with agendas.
Anyone remembers that Litecoin pump with Walmart? I mean, that was crazy, right?
There were loads of things. Lately, yeah. Token came out. Do you remember that, Sefi? The Cosmos Joe influencer token. Everyone was starting to talk about the Joe token. Joe, Cosmos Joe. Have you minted your Joes? Joe in spaces, Joe on tweets. And then the Trader Joe token pumped like 40%.
Yeah, I've allowed to sing
it. Right. That was impressive. Yeah, we did a great job pumping the wrong token. that was impressive. So we caused a short squeeze accidentally. And I don't know if like that's because we are using like the $Joe and then some algorithm somewhere is picking up on like social volume and went ahead and bought the Trader Joe token, which basically is largely like a thin order book or whatever. And there's probably
You're all going to prison for manipulating social media influencer Sefi accused of manipulating shitcoin in undisclosed. You were holding 10% of the supply. And you just pumped it and you sold it to all of the all the unassuming retail users, and now you're going to get your comeuppance. You're going to prison.
How do you feel about that? If I knew that we were going to pump that token, I would have bought it. Fuck that. Like, I don't understand. Like, you know, we were actually all pretty surprised that the thing went up. We're like, hey, wait, the Joe token's pumping, and there's no news or anything on Trader Joe. And it just happens to be the same coin. But yeah, but there's that too, Bruce. But there's also just like these news articles that...
No, I know.
Like if you don't have any information from, say, Interpol or whatever on this Red Notice thing, like it got produced from where? Like just out of thin air. And then as soon as it gets posted, as soon as it's on like the Bloombergs and the Forbes and things like that, like Associated Press or something... sends it to everybody, then like it's basically gospel at that point, because like everyone,
one of the interesting things as well is that I, you know, those articles that popped up like Coach Bruce accuses Doquan of running Lunkdown and stuff like that, I think many of them were AI generated just from tweets, because there were so many that appeared so suddenly with various things.
Yeah, that page was called
CoinGape.
Coin Gape, which is the weirdest name.
Well, like some of them, like some of them appear to be human authored and have a level of kind of flow or curiosity, like somebody's putting together the story. But many of them just seem to be like, it was like one of the tweets would flag some kind of engagement alarm about a certain cryptocurrency. Like maybe it was the top 10 tweets of a certain week or something. And then it would somehow like scan my page or other people's page for tweets with those references, and then just summarize the lot in a really weird way. And it was very automatic. And you can see the same happened with many of the Fat Man things, or
also the Lunkdown account and the Fat Man account both have like a high follower account. So maybe that's more likely to trigger something like this.
Yeah, well, yes.
When two high follower accounts are saying things to each other.
Yep, for sure. It's a weird world. It's definitely, as you've described before, like there's human activity, and then there's this weird like bot multiplier on everything, and then it feeds back into itself. And it's like, what's the origin? Sometimes you don't really know.
Even before all the like fancy new AI stuff right now, like there's an element of this that's been going on that it was like palpable and noticeable for at least as far back as 2018, if not maybe earlier. So there's been a very strong, like, if you think about who's in crypto, right? A lot of like tech people, a lot of developers, you know, a lot of people that are, like maybe in options trading and this and that. And you can't like easily manipulate markets in the regular financial markets without getting caught. But this in the unregulated space, and then where you can be in Bahamas or Virgin Islands or wherever, it's just not that easy to catch anybody, really. So it's like a very, very small fraction of the actual like so-called market manipulation or whatever is actually caught. A perfect example is like, it's pretty well established that like at this point that SBF, Alameda, et cetera, crashed Terra Luna, but the law enforcement paperwork, which was like from the U.S. Department of Justice, SEC, whatever, that didn't include that market manipulation as one of the charges in the reason why they captured him. Did you notice that? I don't know if you noticed that. Like,
no, this. I haven't had a look.
But that was fascinating, because it was sort of widely disseminated that like that Justice was going after SBF. This is before they caught him, that they were going after him for the Terra market crash. And then when they actually caught him, we never heard anything more about that. Like maybe there's like other charges yet to be levied or something, but it's like not obvious what happened to those charges of market, so-called market manipulation. Interesting.
Wasn't that in the New York Times too, that ran that piece about those charges before?
I don't remember.
I think it was something reputable, I thought.
Oh, Anthony, what's going on?
Hello,
Anthony.
That's pretty much it. Hi, guys. How you all doing?
How can we help you today?
I'm in the process of setting up a validator, to be fair. I'm a little bit stuck with the Oracle feeder and can't seem to get an answer.
Contact PFC.
PSC.
PFC. PFC.
PFC. Validator. Okay. He's on Discord.
Oh, you're in the validator Discord. He's good. He's always helpful. Uh-huh. He might try and siphon money out of you, but if you kind of maintain your boundaries and don't offer money to him, then he will help you.
that's fine. I've got nuts. I'll feed him some nuts. That's yeah.
Maybe promise him something like just say like maybe down the road I want to run more validators, and then his little fucking dollar signs of his eyes will pop up, and he'll help you for free because he'll think like, oh, this is an investment in the future of my pockets.
Ed was. I was speaking to Ed earlier, and he just disappeared. But I guess he's just super busy.
Yeah, not Ed. Ed is a different creature entirely. But PFC's run validators for years and rents them out and helps people all the time. He helped me.
Cool. PFC.
He helped me.
He's like, have you seen Star Wars Episode One, The Phantom Menace? He's like Watto, and he's got all of his different validator parts, and you have to go and trade with him. You know, what are you going to trade for a validator? And he's going to help you. He's the man. He has all the parts.
I've just waved at him, so we'll see what he says. But
the only thing about him is he can be very aggressive, but that's because he's got a personality disorder. It's not anything personal, so don't take it personally. Just
cool.
Like, you know, when a girlfriend is really intense and kind of angry and volatile or whatever, and if you engage with it, she gets worse. But if you stay calm, she kind of comes down. She diffuses. Like, just apply that. Like, stay grounded, stay calm, stay present, stay serene, and let his volatile energies just kind of sink in and marinate in your calmness.
Cool. I'll enjoy it. I'll enjoy them. Okay, perfect. Thank you. I'm just going to sit and listen for a bit. I'm going to try and get to the bottom of this because I'm 99% there. Sorry.
Very nice.
But yeah, like running validators, though, won't get you laid. Like, if that's your goal. I don't know what your goal is.
I'm divorced, buddy. I really don't want to get laid.
Yeah, well, I mean, perfect. Sure about that? Then perfect.
I heard that running validators can get you laid.
Nope.
I think it's kind of the opposite, maybe.
My Tinder bio is four letters, node, and it hasn't worked.
Did you put in your bio that you're a validator?
Just got node on there, and they're like, node of what? And I'm like, I run many nodes on many chains, many Cosmos chains. Yeah, like just setting up my Oracle price feed, blah, blah, blah. And it has not worked. It's sad because
you just... I don't know if you're taking the piss out of me. I'm literally just trying, to do something constructive in the evenings.
I run validators too, friend.
You got to rebrand it, Coach. You got to call it mailbox money. Women love that shit.
Yeah, just tell them you got mailbox money. I'm not sure how to.
No,
Anthony, just if I'm a guy who runs validator nodes, how do I sell that in a way that's sexy to women? I don't know how to solve that problem.
Put your server specs in your bio.
Anthony, to hear what the part of the story you're missing is that we have had entire like marathon spaces of like 24 plus hours. About Bruce's past sexcapades, right? And since he's become a validator, we have heard no new stories about anything, right? It's like complete full stop, like as if the story has ended. Maybe he's gone from a Norwood 2 to Norwood 3 now in terms of like on the baldness scale. And all this time has passed, yet there are no more sexcapades, Antonio. So that's
no spot. I always expected Bruce to be in some like polyamorous relationship or something.
Hang on, I didn't hear that. There was a bit of interference. Something about polyamory.
that's how I always expect you to be in sort of one of those.
A guy with a leather coat and a girl with blue hair and 10 nose rings, like that kind of.
It could be all the other way around. Yeah, it's the blue, isn't it? It's either the blue hair or blue fingernails, or there's always some blue lipstick.
Like I'm in a relationship with five people and we all live in a micro apartment somewhere in some kind of metrosexual part of London, and people in the relationship, one of the five people, he's called George and he has a mohawk. He prepares our packed sandwiches every day for when we go to work at our startups. And then we come home and we talk like game theory about who's going to have sex with who.
Chem sex. Chem sex.
That's the perfect description of it. I love it.
That's like the ideal show, the ideal reality show right there, by the way. Like, you get a camera on that wall, I guarantee that'd be a hit.
With the whole lung thing, I was thinking a good reality show as well. You know those people talking about holacracy all the time and stuff? And we got to get a structure. We got to do this. We got to do that. Terror rebels. What if you just take all 50 main people and just put them in a fucking house and then force them to work it out? And it's like there's no escape unless Lunk is a $4 billion blockchain.
That's exactly.
There's got to be an ample supply of beanbag chairs, I'd say.
And then who's ever acting like a jackass gets voted out, and everybody can see it live, and so they're gone.
Well, I'd rather,
no, every day that goes by that the price doesn't go up, there's a small hole in the side of this house, and I'm going to put like little bugs and shit in there, and it's going to come around and bite everyone, and like maybe like nip at their nuts or something until the blockchain is at $4 billion.
Well, I don't want anyone to be chucked out because I think they should suffer each other, and I think that the lower the market cap goes, the less food should be dispensed. Kind of like, you know, those hamster feed things that are outside the cage and gradually drip food in or something. Like the rate could just slow. So they get skinnier and skinnier and skinnier. And they have to fucking work it out. Like they have to work out how to bring it to 4 billion. But between their combined brains, there's just no fucking way they're going to do it.
Or Bruce, what you could do is basically you could move the walls in like the Star Wars trash compactor, you know. Just make the space every much so smaller, you know.
And then as the price goes up, I think you take away the condoms and give a bunch of Viagra, so that it has to expand. And it's just a bunch of
there could be some kind of tokenomic thing whereby you need to pay to watch, so therefore the more hellish the scenario of the house and the more skinny and more fucking volatile they are, the more people are interested in watching it. So that's like a counterbalance to the market cap, kind of like the relationship between UST and Luna.
Bruce, what if, like, let's expand on this for just a second. Let's say you start like some kind of YouTube feed or something like that, sort of like proving. And what happens is unless people send, like maybe buy Lunk and stake it or something, you will refuse to eat, and like the people are going to watch you starve to death. And people are like, oh no, Bruce, we can't have him die. So they all send, like, you know, they stake, and then you're in this house. And then eventually it goes from like, well, you can apply even more Lunk or Luna or whatever. And he's going to do like little maybe tricks, like monkey tricks, or like backflips. Like maybe little tasks and things that are like crypto powered, so that they can bring utility to the goddamn blockchain.
I've considered gambit strategies before. Like imagine that somebody is quite popular on Twitter. They post every day and they've been around for a year. What if they just tweeted one day, I'm not going to post ever again until this tweet gets 10,000 retweets, and then they just disappear? How long would it take for them to get it? Because there would be an interval where nobody really cares, right? And then it's like, oh, he's actually gone. And then a year later, it's like, he's not been seen in a year. I hope he's all right. And people would start to be interested. And then like 10 years later, it's like, he's really fucking not gone. He's really gone. And then like somebody major would start retweeting because it would get viral at some point just through the natural fluctuations, right? And then you would come back suddenly. And then the question is like, is there a way to do that where the investment of you not being on Twitter at all is worth the returns? And I thought about doing that for validators as well. Like, I'm not coming back to Twitter unless you stake X amount with me, and then just disappear. Like, do pure emotional blackmail with all of them.
Have you seen the Lightning Chicken Feeder? There's one Lightning programmer that has this chicken feeder out there, right, with a webcam on it. So you can send him some sets, and then the chickens get some feed.
The Lightning Network Chicken Feeder.
Yes, real. I'm not joking.
I think we could. That makes perfect sense. Now that I'm thinking about it, Bruce, but you think that like it would still work if you have advertised this concept already on Twitter Space?
Absolutely.
Aren't people going to say like, well, he just planned this. He's not really murdered or whatever.
No.
The mystery.
Because if I didn't say it, they would think like, there's a chance I'm dead. But now that I've said it, they know it's real, and they know I will be back. So there's more trust for that, I think. But yeah, I'm wondering if like a strategy like that could be even more effective than anything else. Like, especially with the Lunk DAO presence and Twitter and stuff. What if I just said, I think we've got like 55 billion stake Lunk or something like that. If I said 100 100 or I'm not coming back. See ya. I wonder how long it would take.
Well, I tried this. I tried this with the Burning Dex Twitter page. I said 500 retweets for airdrop. We got 400 and then it never hit 500. So I just stopped and it never did hit 500. So
built no trust them. And nobody cared. And you were nobody to start with. It's like, why would I care about a stranger who I don't even know? But LunkDAO is like a part of people's lives. They consider LunkDAO to be a friend, a lover, or whatever. Emotional guidance. It's been such a present part of people's life for so long that they'll feel the loss. It's different. I don't know why you're comparing it.
I don't know why you had to say the quiet part out loud. That's true. I didn't build any trust. I was just a communist for 3 weeks. I was just a communist man tweeting about
airdrops. That was really good. I didn't do that, you know. That could have been a lot of money because there was no DEX on Terra. And even now, they're building a report.
Oh, God. The map, the gap in the market's still there. It's still there. Jesus Christ, man.
There's no DEX. They're looking for a DEX, and the DEX will bring utility.
We're just one DEX away from...
In fact, that was like that was an idea years where you could have made, I don't know, a lot of money very quickly.
Yeah, probably true. I mean, like, it would have been better than the Lunatics token or whatever fucking garbage got released over the summer. Let's be honest. What even? Don't get me started.
So what are we going to IDO then? That's the question.
Right. Well, I like the idea of putting Coach in a transparent cube and putting it over the Thames using a crane. And then every time, the chicken feed idea, except it's Coach in a transparent perspex cube over the Thames.
I went to see that. Do you know that? Is I went to see it with my dad when I was a kid.
Really?
The day by the London Bridge.
Yeah. I was there too.
As long as you have a coin that's tied to something that you can legitimately make happen, right? And it can't be construed like a rug pull or something. So long as, like, you know, it's like a clear like rationale for why people buy the thing. But there's got to be a funny little coin we have to make just for the fuck of it. I think we need to do that. How to make it?
Did you say a coin?
Yeah, just
token. I have it planned already. For the brainlet NFT set, there'll be a brain token.
Oh, has any progress been made on that project?
Yeah, so planned out the whole vision basically, on both an artistic side and like why it matters and why it's better than BAYC and how it solves crypto as a whole, and just the concepts, and I've reached out to about three or four different artists and just asked them to make napkin sketches so far, describe like the whole project and what I want to get, and I'll just see what they come up with. Ideally, I can work with somebody like Zara, because that would be nice, like somebody I know as well. But as well as that, I think Karma has said she's interested. A few other people have said they're interested. So it's just a question of like who gets it the most, and then we'll work with them. But then, like, long run, when the set is created and it's fun, it's going, there's infinite opportunity to interface with new projects and stuff to incentivize like people to use like that SAVE protocol thing, the learning platform, right? Maybe if people start using that and they have a certain amount of interactions with it, they would earn a battery for their head, and the battery gets stuck on the dimwit head or something, or they'd earn a certain amount of brain tokens, or 40% of the total supply of brain tokens would be for usage of those projects, right? So then we form relationships between the NFT set and all of the ecosystem projects in both Lunk and Luna. And we have some kind of interesting feedback loop where the NFT holders want to earn the accessories and the projects want the NFT holders to use their projects. Brain token can be like the core of that. And also...
The nice thing about these kinds of games and things when you do them with like Terra Station, which is not the case with like Kepler and all these things, is it's very difficult to sort of like set up games and things directly from the phone, whereas it's really, really nice to be able to produce something that's mobile. You know, like where like if it's mobile, you have the opportunity to like play anytime during the day or whatever, push buttons and stuff.
Mm. Yep, it's better. And I'm also thinking we could have some kind of brain token brain surgery option, right? So like when a person has earned a certain amount of brain tokens, they can perform brain surgery on themselves and upgrade to like a bigger brain or something. We haven't quite mapped it out yet, but like it can be a token of the brain expansion economy and the brain surgery economy, but also for learning as well. And we'll try and tie all those things together. But I think brain is a good way to do it. For a fun token.
It turns out because Pantera came, I have to leave, by the way, guys.
Oh.
Yeah, he and I are at odds with each other. So I've got to, like, he is the reason for this host space having to stop. I apologize.
How would you describe what he's done with one word?
Unforgivable.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was part two of the two-part Chepe Space, Your Stock, and Crypto Picks, recorded on Tuesday, January 3rd, 2023. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening. And if you want to keep listening, head on over to TerraSpaces.org/donate and show some support. Walking down the street late night with the worst time. Never underestimate the lines that are curved right. Everyone investigated lying about a birthright. Get it off my chest a bit, typing out a word pie. Gonna eat shit straight to your safe place. Soup with a fly on a spoon in my database. Update the playlist, bumping these 808s. Ain't no way I'm saving face, sitting with these shady mates. Got a whole dug, ready for a head in it. Jumped out a plane, now he's feeling all bedridden. Looking magnificent, dressed like a hoarder. Rip on his tombstone, he couldn't take orders. The game is whack, knick-knack, caddyshack. Go for the low-hanging fruit like a paddy wagon. Maniac, trying to wash off the damage. Just another night throwing javelins. Focus on the craft, lifting up brain weights. Repping that repetition like he's gotta represent. Disconnected from the rest, even when he's feeling blessed. The rest never comes soon enough. Rumors bluff, ruin luck, bruised up from being the elusive one. Mr. Do or Die, suiting up hungry. Like a broke Iron Man, stunting for the country. It's all lovely on the day he got the call. It was time to ship out, done waiting on y'all. Isolation on the pilot ship was a fucking cakewalk. He was made for the rush. When it's time to find a planet, who they gonna send? How the fuck you think you gonna handle the descent? About to fall asleep for 20 years. Are we there yet? Creeping where no one's ever crept.
Terra Spaces.